The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
It is Monday, December 6th, 2010. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live from the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow. Well, I guess within the literal, not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It is snowing outside, not intensely, but it's our first snow of the year, I think. And the heat has come on in the lush Majority Report studios, and it seems to be pumping out some type of noxious gas. And so if I pass out during the course of this broadcast, send help. Like I say, we're just call the EMS, tell them that we're in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District. They'll know. I think we've made a name for ourselves in this locale. I am sporting today, ladies and gentlemen, for the beginning of the week, my new Hanukkah sweater. It is cobalt blue. It is a little flashier than any color I have I've ever donned in the past. So you can check out the Sammy Cam, though we are sans sound on the Sammy Cam. Is that correct?
Yeah. That Sammy Cam actually might be rebooting, so it'll be back up in a second.
Well, the cobalt blue sweater will still be there. I'm not sure I like it. Dorsey gave me a thumbs up.
Yeah, I think it looks good.
You don't think it looks a little suburban?
Yeah, but I mean, if it looks suburban, it looks good suburban.
It's good suburban?
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. I have some questions about it, but I guess it's in the great scheme of things, at least I'm keeping warm, and that's the important thing. I'm more of a navy blue person. This is a little flashy for someone like myself. Got a great show for you today. Bill Scher will be joining us today. Bill Scher, my old friend from Liberal Oasis and Campaign for America's Future, and formerly on Cedars on Sunday, he used to do the Weekend Watchdog.
Woof, woof.
And I contacted him. I said, "Hey, you want to do that again?" He's like, "Nah, I'm a dad now, and so." Sunday afternoons like are my only time, and I realized that the Sunday show's just irrelevant. And they have gotten more irrelevant, haven't they, over the years? I mean, particularly Tim Russert's passing away, I think, made him a little bit less relevant. And frankly, we know what's going to happen every week, and I loathed watching those shows. You know, I had to because it was Sunday, and my boss at the time had told me, you know, this would be good and, you know, a regular feature. And some people enjoyed it to get as a summary. But, you know, I can give you a summary of what went on this Sunday without having watched any of them. It's basically just a bunch of bullcrap. People said a lot of stuff that was predictable. And then nobody really paid attention, and everybody argued that we should screw the middle class in one form or another. That would be basically what I would say happened without knowing. I don't even know who the guests were, but I am sure it was a multimillionaire asking questions of other millionaires or people who hang out with millionaires, and to justify why we should give more money to millionaires. That would be my assessment. And I have nothing against millionaires. I think there are some very nice millionaires. I think there are some very helpful and progressive millionaires. And I mean that not in the in the specific political sense, but in the sense that they understand that they didn't simply get their money because they are better than someone else. That they worked harder than someone else. They have some measure of humility and realize that luck, luck, be it luck of birth or luck of just things cut their way, or all of a sudden, yeah, everybody wanted to buy a pet rock. Or, you know, yeah, who knew that when I invented this emoticon, this smiley face emoticon, that years later I would be a multimillionaire. I don't know if the person who invented it is a millionaire, but you get my point. I've met a lot of millionaires. You know what? They're not necessarily harder workers or brighter people. Sometimes they had a stake that was given to them by their parents. Sometimes they just got lucky. There are, or maybe they were just really good business people, which doesn't necessarily mean that they have any value to give anyone other than the fact that they're good salespeople. You know, I've noticed over the years that there's a lot of very talented people with a lot of very talented ideas that just don't make it because of bad luck, because they aren't good bullshitters, whatever it is. So I don't hold someone in high regard just because they're millionaires, and I don't hold someone in low regard or less regard because they're not. And this is relevant because it seems that the vast majority of our political class is focused on what is good for the rich. Krugman has a piece today, I guess, or I read it today. I'll talk about it later. If I read it today, then it only exists today. You understand that, right? Where he talks about this concept of tout le monde, or essentially our world, in the circles in which we travel. And I don't have an answer as to why Obama does what he does. I have multiple answers. I don't know if any of them are right. Let's put it that way. But one thing is clear, that our political leadership in this country, our political elite, and I don't mean that in the Rush Limbaugh talking about elite. I'm talking about the people who are in the position of power in this country. They tend to hang out with, to use the vernacular that the kids use, people who have a very narrow perspective on what success in society means, what success for society means. And it's becoming increasingly clear that their calculation is one of the trickle-down, I guess, variety. That if it's good for the richest amongst us, it necessarily must be good for society. That if the stock market's doing well, then, you know, the economy could be rebounding. That if corporate profits are up, then, you know, this is good. This is a good sign for the economy. That if the GDP is at a certain number, that's necessarily good for society. As opposed to, do the vast majority of people, or does the benefit from any given policy? And by vast majority, I mean 90%. Does the middle class have financial security? Does everyone have access to affordable health care, as opposed to, hey, we've got the best hospitals in the world. We've got princes coming from Saudi Arabia here. Now, of course, you got to be a prince from Saudi Arabia, or the financial equivalent in this country, to actually access that health care. But the fact that we have it in the United States, that makes us number one. And it's becoming increasingly clear that in many respects, the Obama administration is operating with the formula that, you know, Robert Rubin might speak of. that Larry Summers might speak of, which is no, really, in no way fundamentally different from what an old-time Republican would say. For the rich, by the rich. So, you know, I'm a little bit agitated today. I've been, you know, Friday really got me going. And that's carried through over through the weekend. And, you know, I'm going to have to lean on this thing quite a bit. I have a feeling in the coming day. Just to lighten up the show. This is the scene, of course, where there's the marionettes. And I don't know if you remember that, but it's so cute and hopeful and little Liesel. Isn't that the name of the youngest girl? Liesel. And they all moved to New Hampshire and became ski bums. There's always going to be some sunshine on the other end, folks, but it's getting cloudy around here. This is a fun story. I like this story. The Texas Republican Party having some problems with their leadership battles. The Texas State Legislature, they have a Speaker of the House. I guess this guy, their current Speaker of the House, Joe Strauss, apparently there's a big move afoot on the State Republican Executive Committee to get rid of this guy, Joe Strauss. Turns out he's a Jew. And it's not enough in the modern Republican Party, certainly in Texas, to be, you know, a right-wing Jew. You got to be a right-wing Christian. Apparently, one of these members of the executive committee, this guy John Cook, sent a... in response to a fact sheet basically sent around by another member of the State Republican Executive Committee, I guess saying that, look, Jews can be just as crass and small-minded and wanting to screw the middle class and just as regressive as the rest of us. And Cook responded, look, we elected a House with Christian conservative values, we now want a true Christian conservative running it. fantastic. I want to make sure, this is a quote from him, that a person I'm supporting is going to have my values. It's not anything about Jews and whether I think their religion is right, or Muslims, whether I think their religion is right. And I think you could put in parenthetically, but of course I think their religion is wrong. I mean, not just wrong, like going to hell wrong, like you are really in trouble wrong. But that's not what I'm talking about here. I got into politics to put Christian conservatives into office. Because I'm a Constitution lover! That's also in parentheses. He didn't say that explicitly. They're the people that do the best jobs overall. And then, apparently, in this interview, the reporter from the Texas Observer, Abby Rappaport. He asked if the reporter was a Christian. And said, I just need to know who I'm talking to so I can understand. In parentheses, if you are a dirty Jew. He didn't say that. When I say parentheses, folks, I'm just simply, I'm attempting to parse out the subtext of the what he's saying. He says, the Bible is true to me. God exists. Christ is his son. The Holy Spirit is in the people who are Christian. And women, when they get their time of the month, they should be put out by the pasture, whatever it is. Cook said his opposition was not about Strauss' religion, although he prefers Christian candidates. They're some of my best friends, he said of Jews, naming two friends of his. Jewy Jewerson and Jewy McJujan, Juju. I'm not bigot at all. I'm not racist. Well, and that's the good news, folks. The good news is that as difficult as all of this is to absorb this notion of Democratic senators signing letters saying it's time for austerity and the Democratic president who said no extension of tax cuts for millionaires, twisting arms now to get tax cut extensions for millionaires. Everything may be upside down, but not in Texas. Texas, it's all just on an even keel. Steers have horns, and so don't the Jews. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back, we'll be talking to Mr. Bill Scher. This is the Majority Report. All right, we're back. Very excited to welcome to the show for the first time, longtime Majority Report guest, Cedar on Sunday guest, Sam Cedar Show guest, Mr. Bill Scher.
Woof, woof.
All right, Bill, let's just get right into this. The tax cut vote. We know last week the House voted to provide a tax cut extension for the middle class. Then what happened?
So the House passes the vote. The Senate then puts two versions of that on the floor on Saturday. You have the House bill version, which was the original Obama version, no tax cut extension above income above $250,000. That fails, got 53 votes, but not the 60-vote supermajority to beat back a filibuster. They tried the Schumer version, which raises that threshold to $1 million. That picks up three more conservative Dems. It loses three liberal Dems. You're back at 53 votes. You still don't beat back the filibuster. Now you're back at the negotiating table, and the scuttlebutt.
Wait, let me stop. Let's before we get to the scuttlebutt.
Yeah.
Who are the Democrats that the three progressive Democrats who didn't vote for the $1 million was basically because they wanted it to keep it below 250. They also knew that 56 votes doesn't mean anything because you can't break the filibuster, correct?
Right. And if I remember, serves, it was Durbin, Harkin, and I think Rockefeller. And now Feingold voted against both versions because he says whatever you do in the tax cuts needs to be quote-unquote paid for. He's essentially taking sort of an uber deficit hawk posture in his final weeks as senator.
Well, you know, the thing about Feingold has always, I don't know if he's taken an unprincipled vote ever, frankly, and he paid the price for that.
Fair enough.
But be that as it may, so who else? And then it's the Liebermans, the Nelsons, the Conrads.
With Ben Nelson, I think Lieberman voted against the original Democratic version, right, but voted for the millionaire version.
Of course he did. Of course he did. All right. So be that as it may, it's not, and it hasn't passed the Senate. So what happens now? Do we let the extensions pass and take that money, the $4 trillion that we're going to save over 10 years, and pump it into some stimulus, get this economy roaring back, because we know that this is a very efficient way to get money into the system, is to have government just dump it directly into the system so we know it's being spent. We'll build the economy up. That will shrink the deficit, because economic growth is the best way to shrink a deficit. And bingo, right? Solved.
That's what we should do.
Oh.
Are you asking what the Congress will actually pass? Is a whole thing, a different question. But
well, let me ask you that then. Let me ask you that. What's going to happen next? So we have the scuttlebutt.
Speaking for myself only, I'm not speaking on behalf of my organization, Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org, where there's lots of fine blogging going on. But just speaking for myself.
Right. That's all we're interested in.
The question is, how do we maximize the bargaining leverage of Democrats in Washington? That's the best you could do at this juncture.
All right. Well, but I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you about the scuttlebutt. There's negotiations going on. Who are the parties to this negotiation, and what are the different things that are being pitched?
So Obama's tapped Tim Geithner, head of Treasury, and Jacob Lew, who's the new budget director, to be the main negotiators with the Republican leadership, John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, as well as on the Democratic side, Reid and Pelosi.
So we should say that we have the former Citibank executive and the New York Fed, these guys are negotiating to try and keep millionaires from getting their tax breaks, right? Okay, just I want to see who's representing us from the White House. Okay.
In some fairness, what they are trying to add, they're trying to, you know, widen the pot, if you will. They're trying to make sure that jobless aid is part of this deal. And I think as an indirect benefit, because the Republicans in the Senate have said, hey, if you don't do tax cuts, we're going to block everything. If you get it done quickly, you in theory could get don't ask, don't tell repeal. You could get the Nuclear STAR treaty. I don't know if that would be explicitly part of the deal, but it could be kind of a side agreement. And then the question becomes, okay, well, what kind of tax extension are you talking about? Are you talking 1 year, talking 2 year, talking 3 year? What kind of an employment extension are you talking about? Are you talking another 99 weeks? Is this going to be for a full year? Is it going to be for a few months? There's a range of things that could go on as far as how good or bad this deal could be. No one's talking about an A-plus deal, of course. But what can you do now to make sure that whatever deal gets done is the best it could possibly be?
Right. Now, what's going to happen, Bill?
Well, honestly, I don't know, because I don't think it's clear, because you've just taken these congressional votes. What is the ramification of that? What happens in the districts and the states of the Republicans and the handful of Democrats that voted against the tax cut extension for the middle class in deference to multimillionaires? Do they take heat for that? And in my opinion is, the more heat they take, the better the bargaining leverage is for Obama.
So the thing that people, we're assuming that that leverage is necessarily something that we want here in terms of, but be that as it may, what has to happen is it has to go back to the House now, right?
Well, it has to go back to both bodies, and you already have Howard Fineman and Huffington Post saying, look, you got a lot of liberal Democrats in the House that say, I think this is a weak deal. I think the unemployment extension is not significant enough to give a 2 or 3 year extension for taxes for the wealthy, which could very well end up being a de facto permanent extension if you don't have the the spine to cut it off now. Krugman's making the point in his column today that, raising taxes across the board, if you have gridlock, yeah, it's not great for employment, but it's not apocalyptic either, and you don't want to be under the Republicans' thumb for the next 2 years, so better not to have the deal at all. Obviously, some liberal House Democrats are taking that advice. So there's got to be some head counting on the part of Obama and Pelosi and to a lesser extent Reid. How many Democrats are you going to lose on that deal, and how many Republicans are you going to get? Can you make the math work? And that's why I think you haven't seen them actually come out in front of the microphone saying this deal is done, because they don't know if the math works just yet.
Now, what do you think should be done, Bill? I mean, we're talking about much-needed unemployment insurance for people, which has an incredibly stimulative, not incredibly, but it has a, on the spectrum of things that we're talking about here, has a very stimulative effect on the economy, because all that unemployment benefits gets spent immediately. We also know that has to be factored into this is that the Republicans, I mean, presumably the Republicans, will they be able to pass these tax cuts when they own the House? Will they be responsible for not providing unemployment extension benefits when they own the House? I mean, this we're talking about a month away now.
2012 will most likely be about the economy. Whatever the state of the economy is will probably dictate what happens with the presidency, what happens with Congress. What you laid out earlier, to have a 21st century industrial policy would be the smart thing to do, but no way that gets through a Republican House in the next 2 years. So you're very limited in what you could actually do. To pump, you want to pump money in and not take money out. In the, you know, obviously, I think the wealthy folks, you give them a tax cut, they don't necessarily pump it back in. But generally speaking, the more you can pump in the economy, the better, be it through tax cuts or spending. So if you can get unemployment insurance extension over a longer frame and extend the Obama tax cut, the middle class tax cuts that are in the Recovery Act, that, to me, is potentially the most you're going to be able to do in the next 2 years to be as Keynesian as possible. So I can understand it being a hard deal to walk away from, as distasteful as it is. And I don't know if it necessarily follows that if you give into the Republican concession today and have a two-year, three-year tax cut for the wealthy, that means you can never cut it off later, because – you know, mandates and political capital is a very fluid thing. The economy looks good in 2 years. Obama's reelected with a strong mandate. Does Democrats take back the House? Then you may very well can cut it off in 2 years. You don't know. It's a gut check judgment call.
I'm sorry. Did you say if the Democrats take back the House in 2012?
Anything is possible. There's no way you can game out 2 years from now.
Well, I think there's some truth to that. I mean, I think there's some truth to that. I mean, no one would have thought that we would see such political malfeasance at this point 2 years in the past. But let me offer this to you. Maybe this is sort of this is a naive armchair political scenario. The tax cuts don't get extended. Unemployment benefits don't get extended.
Right.
Republicans come in, their first thing they're going to talk about is tax cuts. Am I correct? Right?
What they would do is pass their ideal plan, probably a permanent extension of all the tax cuts. It would get through the House. It would probably die in the Senate. Probably would not get 60 in the Senate. But, you know, maybe more Democrats cave than we expect. And it does get through the Senate, gets to the president's desk. In all likelihood, the president would veto that, because he is the one red line he has drawn is no permanent extension.
So if we know that's the Republican agenda,
right,
wouldn't we be in a better situation to negotiate at that point?
Well, that all comes down to, you know, what would the political fallout be at that point? How well do both parties frame the debate? In theory, you could say, blame the Republicans. They threw the middle class tax cuts over the side. They cut off jobless benefits for everybody just so they could get the biggest windfall possible to their multimillionaire CEO friends. Or Republicans could then say, hey, we had a deal. We had a deal for everyone to get a tax cut and everyone get their unemployment benefits. and the liberal Democrats in the House screwed it up, and Obama didn't stand up to them, and they're the reason why he didn't get anything today. So that would be quite the grudge match. And I think it's hard to predict how that would turn out, but it would be a very high-stakes move to take. And it may be the right thing to do. The one caveat I would give is I think the bottom line 2012 is the state of the economy, not the spin game.
Right.
As good and if you're going to say, yeah, the economy still sucks in 2012 and it's the Republicans' fault, that might be a hard argument for Democrats to make.
So let's move on to – so that's the dilemma there. I don't know, you know, it's a dilemma. It's a real dilemma.
It's an unpleasant place to be, and I think as John Stewart said in 2009 to the Republicans, this isn't tyranny, you lost. It's supposed to taste like a poop taco.
Right.
Which is sort of where we are right now.
Right. And unfortunately, the taste of a poop taco has not really left my mouth over the past year and a half. And that's when it was supposed to taste like a regular taco, isn't it?
Tacos are supposed to be tasty.
Now, let's move from tacos to this deficit commission. The deficit commission was set up by Obama, and then the leaders of both the Senate and the House, Pelosi and Reid, agreed to vote on the deficit commission if it came out with a legitimate report, which meant 14 out of 18 commissioners voted for the report. 14 out of 18 commissioners didn't vote for the report. I believe it was 11-7. But now it seems that the report has achieved what it was supposed to achieve. It comes out as this grand bargain that is now creating some center of gravity for people to sell out essentially Social Security. There was a letter written by 14 Democratic senators, all of whom were returning except for Evan Bayh, and it did not include, my understanding, Dick Durbin and Ken Conrad, but Durbin has already said that he can live with essentially cutting Social Security by raising the retirement age. So if you take those 14 people and add Durbin, and I think Ken Conrad didn't sign it, and you add this, what you're looking at is a supermajority for Republicans and Democrats who are willing to screw over the middle class starting next year. Are we looking at essentially the beginning of the cutting of Social Security?
Well, it may well be something we have to fight. And where I work, Campaign for America's Future, we are leading this fight. We've already have a petition to President Obama to say no to any Social Security cuts and to say no to any raise of the retirement age. We've created our own Citizens Commission, which has an alternative deficit reduction plan showing how you can get to long-term budget balance with a jobs-first deficit plan that doesn't start the cutting until unemployment is down to a reasonable level with more upfront stimulus and not touching Social Security except for dealing with the payroll tax cap. That would be the better way to go, of course. Now, when this got done, the Simpsons and Bowles have tried to do what you said and give this a aura of political momentum. The president has not quite done that. He gave a statement afterwards on paper that lauded their work and said he's going to review the plan. He's going to meet with the commission. He's going to meet with congressional leaders, blah-de-blah-de-blah. And then he hopped on a plane to Afghanistan. He didn't go to the podium with Simpson and Bowles and said, I agree with every last line of this. We don't know what exactly he will take out of this plan. He may take the Social Security cuts. He may make that his signature issue. Durbin was on Face the Nation yesterday and said, if there's one thing I think we can work on a bipartisan basis, it's Social Security. And Durbin has been seen as very close to Obama. So that may be what he does. But we don't know. What we can do is to make very clear to the president, this is, if anything's a line in the sand, it's this. You will not just make the base cranky. You will not just hurt our feelings. This will decimate the progressive base if you take this path. There was a point earlier in the administration where there was some time they were going to lead with Social Security cuts. That would be one of their first acts. And we sent the message to the president, if you do that, you know, we are off the bus. And that's when they put it on the shelf for a while and waited for this commission to pop up. So the louder we are on this score, the more likely the president doesn't take that piece of it, which the commission itself says is not about reducing the deficit. It's a separate issue altogether. He could pursue a deficit reduction plan without touching Social Security at all.
Now, we should also say that the tax cuts for people over $250,000, I think Krugman had mentioned it in that article that you referenced. The, you know, his article was, let's not make a deal. He says, and I have every reason to believe him, let me get it here, that the amount of money that we're talking about for these tax cuts, $4 trillion in lost revenue over the next, that's just over the next decade. Over the next 75 years, the revenue loss from that tax cut would be more than three times the entire projected Social Security shortfall. We could fund Social Security, and when we talk about funding Social Security, we're talking about funding it for the years after 2037, because it's already filled up there. We could fund Social Security three times over to generations, I guess, we're talking about like year 2200 with these tax cuts that we are now debating. So this Social Security thing, you mentioned that we need to tell the Obama administration that this is where the progressive base gets off the bus. I would actually argue that it's larger than the progressive base.
Well, and polling has shown this. There's polling that we've done at Campaign for America's Future. There's polling that every independent outfit, MSNBC, NBC, Wall Street Journal, CNN. What polls the worst across the board is cutting Social Security. Democrats, independents, Republicans, Tea Partiers.
Tea Party.
Nobody wants it.
So what the Republicans will do is, once this cut to Social Security happens, they will say, Barack Obama, head of the Democratic Party, was the one responsible for cutting your Social Security. It will destroy the Democratic Party. I think there will be nothing left of the Democratic Party. It will be associated with cutting Social Security in this freaky world. Let's talk about how we send this message. Is it, you know, how much talk should there be about primarying Barack Obama at this point?
Well, I personally would not go there. I would argue that any primary challenge has almost always been debilitating for that party. I can't think of a time where there was a primary challenge where that guy won and everything was hunky-dory after that.
That's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about what's more debilitating to the party, the loss of the presidency in 2012 or the Democrats being responsible for cutting Social Security?
It would be politically disastrous for the president to embrace Social Security cuts. I agree with that. But I don't know if we have to get into the primary challenge discussion now. I mean, there's a game afoot to send that message to the president that you don't want to do this. You don't need to do this. The polling is not on your side. The policy is not on your side. It's politically not on your side. It's a disaster. Eight ways to Sunday. And the louder we send that message to him now, because, you know, everyone gets into a bubble when they get into the presidency. It's hard to break out of that sometimes. This happened with Clinton. You know, Clinton was talking about taking a whole chunk of the Social Security Trust Fund and throwing it into Wall Street. That was the hot topic in the late 90s. But there was a big fury on the left at the time, and they pulled back from that. And then and the mantra became save Social Security first. And that was good for the Democratic Party. So there is evidence that I know people get frustrated. They think that they don't get heard by the White House, and the White House only listens to a very insular set of advisors. But we do have the capability, when we speak in unison and speak loudly and clearly, to have an impact, and that now is the absolute time to do that.
All right. Well, I understand, Bill. I understand. I mean, listen, it is a fairly toxic thing to be talking about, you know, primarying your candidate, because it has historically meant the loss of that candidate. But I really do think, and I, you know that I defer to you on all matters political. But this may be one of those times where I am, my deference is with reservation. I reserve the right to change my deference here. That I think that there is an argument to be made that the cutting of Social Security by a Democratic president essentially will make the Democratic Party impossible to regain any footing, such that it may be best to become a minority party for a while that actually has values and some foundation from which to build upon, than a party that is destined to lose the majority status anyways in 2012, perhaps, because they cut Social Security.
Well, let's not assume he's going to cut Social Security just yet.
Right. Okay. Well, listen, let's leave it at that, because we've run out of time here. I know you have to go, because your daughter's sitting there going, why are you talking to a computer, Dad? Who is that man? Who's that man on the other end? I understand that dynamic. I've been there many times. And I have to say that your daughter is far more well-behaved than mine is in these circumstances. But, Bill, it was great to talk to you about this stuff, and we'll check in as this fight continues. And, again, folks, you can visit Bill Scher. Now, you're still doing your weekend show, yes?
So I have my own podcast at liberaloasis.com. I just had David Reese off from Get Your War On as a special guest. He has a new set of comics at New York Magazine.
He does?
I'm
going to have to follow your lead and have him on here. But go listen to Bill Scher's interview, and then I'll have mine, and we'll see which one's better. We could have a vote.
You know, my co-host Tracy Olson has said that our ticket to podcast success is to start a podcast war with you.
Let's do it!
So I might have to come up with some sort of sneak attack. So I'm giving you a heads up to my sneak
yes,
attack.
Yes, you should just tell you should tell your co-host that I don't play fair. It's not going to be words. I'm actually going to do like a DDoS attack on your site.
I will
WikiLeaks you, man. I'll get Joe Lieberman to shut you down.
Well, I'll primary you. I'll get Feingold or Grayson on you. What do you think about that?
This is going to be great. All right, Bill Scher, thanks for joining us. We're gonna take a break. We'll be right back. Take it easy. Go visit liberaloasis.com, folks. Let's get this war going. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Bill Scher. You know, Bill is, he's a very thoughtful guy. And, you know, there is a lot to be said about this calculation. We need these unemployment insurance benefits. At the end of the day, yes, tax cuts are stimulative. They're not nearly as stimulative as government spending. And they're much more stimulative for people under the $250,000 income mark. And how do I know this? Do I simply say this because I like to say it? No. I use studies and science. Bloomberg News, September 14th, 2010. A story on the Moody's Analytics, Inc. study of tax cuts in 2001 and 2003 under President George W. Bush. Were those taxes of wealthy individuals spent? In other words, did that money enter into the economy? Did it create jobs? Did it create demand, which creates jobs?
I don't think so.
No, no, no. Not just I don't think so. The answer is no. The answer is no. The tax, and how could they tell this? The tax savings, the savings rates for wealthy individuals went up. When taxes were raised under Bill Clinton, the savings rates fell. In other words, the money that wealthy people do or do not get in terms of savings on their taxes is not spent. It's saved. It's invested. And not in companies. In stocks. Well, but that raises capital and allows R&D development and allows for businesses to expand. It doesn't. Corporations are sitting on the biggest profits in their history right now. The stock market is up, but job growth is anemic. Chris Cornell, an economist who mined government reports back to 1989 for Moody Analytics, quote, spending by the top 5% of households seems much more closely tied to business cycle issues than it does to tax cut issues. The Moody's research covering couples earning more than $210,000 found that spending by the wealthy is more likely to be influenced by the ups and downs of the stock market than changes in income tax rates. Stock market performance is the, quote, primary factor that is driving the savings of the top 5% of households, not tax cuts. That extra money is nice. It may make them feel better about how rich they are, but it doesn't provoke them to go out and buy more stuff. There are other factors that are a function of that have nothing to do with tax cuts. When tax legislation was slammed by Clinton in 1993, raising the top tax rate to 39.6% from 31%, the saving rate fell from 12.1% in the second quarter to 9.5% in the first quarter of 94. They just don't save as much. That's all. They don't curb their spending. That's the fact. The Joint Committee on Taxation found that only 3% of Americans who report small business income through their individual returns would be affected if the George Bush tax cuts for the rich were extended. Mark Zandi, the chief economist at Moody Analytics, shows that government spending on unemployment benefits, food stamps, or grants to states in fiscal distress has a bigger bang for the buck than tax cuts. The money gets into the economy faster. This is the fact. So there is nothing. There is no calculus here that makes this a good idea. Except for, and the only calculus, and I'm not saying I agree with this, but this is the one that Bill Scherer is espousing, and it's a perfectly legitimate policy perspective, which is if you can get Obama's middle-class tax cuts from the stimulus, and you can get an extension of the middle-class tax cuts, the Bush-era tax cuts, and if you can get unemployment insurance extensions, all of which help grow the economy, and even the small percentage that is grown by the tax cuts for the wealthy, which, as we're saying here, is negligible, all of that may not add up to a good stimulus program of government spending, but it's better than nothing in terms of helping the economy. That's the policy argument. The political argument that Bill Scherer is making that includes that policy argument and says the only way Democrats have any chance politically in 2012 is if there is an improvement in the economy. It's hard to measure what that chance is. I personally think that chance is rather slim. Obama has the best chance. I think that if you just look on a prima facie argument as to our chances in 2012 in terms of the Senate, we have 21 senators up against their 10 senators. And by we, I mean people who still cling to perhaps a fading notion that the Democrats are the best chance for progressive change in this country. It almost seems silly to say that, but it still is the fact, even though it may be a marginal difference. I don't see how the Democrats take back the House. And increasingly, the calculation, and I'm not the only person, you know, the other day we read that piece by Krugman, who was just basically all but calling for a challenge. There are others out there. Increasingly, even the liberal establishment, the Democratic establishment, is starting to ask this question louder and louder. And the reason why it's such an urgent question to ask is that you cannot mount a legitimate challenge to Obama unless it happens. Someone makes that decision right now. Because you need to raise an incredible amount of money. And I haven't decided one way or another, but it's definitely a conversation that should be on the table. Because this conversation, I think, shows the urgency, particularly when it comes to Social Security. I mean, that to me is the what's that line? Isn't there a line? That famous line. From, I think it was World War II. That line. The line
there
that
can't
be...
There were a lot of lines in World War II.
There's a line that can't be crossed. And I can't remember what it is. But anyways, that's the line for me. It's cutting Social Security. Thank you. The Maginot line. Am I pronouncing that right?
That was the French line that was crossed.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, don't cross that line again, folks. But the point is, you don't cross that line. That's my line. That's the line. I'm really, this whole notion of 14 Democrats. 14 Democrats signing this letter to Harry Reid about austerity. It's just unbelievable. Mark Warner, Evan Bayh, Mark Begich, Michael Bennett, Tom Carper, Dianne Feinstein, Kay Hagan, Amy Klobuchar. I'm not going to forget it. Mary Landrieu, Joe Lieberman, Claire McCaskill, Gene Shaheen, John Tester, and Mark Udall. Boy, Tester was a... That's disappointing. He's worried about his election. They're all worried about their election because the major narrative pimped by the mainstream press in this country has been that austerity works or should be done because, frankly, tout le monde. I can't scream today. I got to calm down. I think I'm hosting a countdown tonight. It appears that way. And I don't want to ruin my voice. Show up at MSNBC and find out that you can't do it because you were screaming all day today on your show. That would be stupid. That would be dumb of me. And typical. Krugman has a good one. Not crass, class. He's suggesting that the corporate media, even the liberal establishment, they just don't care about Social Security. Rich people don't care about Social Security. It's irrelevant to them, so cutting it is fine. He has an amazing chart, and we've got to post this chart. Guys, look at this chart. This got to be posted everywhere on every one of our sites. It shows five income quintiles. The top fourth, the middle, the second from the bottom, and the first on the bottom. And that's on the axis. What's the bottom axis called?
That's the x-axis.
The x-axis. So there's four columns, essentially, emanating from the x-axis on the bottom. And then on the y-axis, the one that goes up and down, it breaks down percentages by 10. 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%, 50%, and up to 100%. And on the y-axis, it shows what percentage of income comes from where for the elderly. If you are the poorest of the poor in this country, in the first quintile, the first 20% of wealth in this country, 83% of your income comes from Social Security. If you're in the second quintile, if you're in the bottom 40% of income in this country, nearly half, 81% of your income comes from Social Security. If you're in the middle quintile, in other words, we're not talking 60% of the country, the elderly, have at least 65% of their income comes from Social Security. 65% of 60% of the country. And that, of course, shoots up into the 80s for everybody in 40% below. 65% of income. It keeps two-thirds of our elderly out of poverty. In the fourth quintile, in other words, 80%, fourth quintile, 43% of your income comes from Social Security, nearly half. So for 80% of the country, nearly half get income from Social Security. For 60% of the country, 65% comes. For 40% of the country, 80%. So I'm rolling in all those numbers. Everybody get that? But if you're in the top 20%, if you're in the top 20% income in this country, 17% of your income comes from Social Security. Now, you know that they didn't do this here, but if they broke it down to like 10%, the top 10% of the country, it would be something like 2% comes from Social Security. Rich people don't take Social Security seriously. And even some of those people in that top 20%, they're not sure at age 40 if they'll be in that top 20% when they retire. But that's why the moneyed elite in this country can so easily cut Social Security, because they don't give a shit about it. I want to touch on a couple other things, but our time is up. I'm going to take some questions on the IM. I will be on hosting Countdown tonight. And folks, if you have the opportunity to invest in something that will not help your retirement, although it may provide you some good entertainment and news information in your retirement, why not become a Majority Report member? Our lowest membership is 50 cents a day. And when they start cutting your Social Security, you know, things like going to see movies, on-demand movie, forget it. Minute for minute, I am the cheapest entertainment value you can have. I may not be as uplifting, but wait a second. I'm going to make this a little Hollywood.
High on a hill was a lonely...
Everything's going to be fine, folks. Look, the boy gets the girl, the girl gets the boy. The village is saved. What else good things happen? It's snowing. Look, it's snowing out. This is going to be the best Christmas ever. Of course, we look out, it stops. So. All right, folks, see you tomorrow. Stick around. I'll answer your IMs at Majority FM. All right, let's go to the IMs. Got to try and make it short today, folks, because I need to prep to do this show.
Are we allowed to, like, tweet that out and stuff?
Let's wait.
Okay.
Let's wait. There's no reason to...
Just wanted to let you know, to let everybody out there know not to do that yet, maybe.
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, don't do it if you haven't. If you have, do. I don't care. But let's not us do it. Let's see. Major, if corporations have rights like people, are pro-life groups going to stop the termination of corporations? Good question. Nefertiti, countdown, woohoo, that's awesome. Are you hosting it live? Yes. Oh. I am hosting it live, I believe. Jesus was a Jew, but it was a fallen. Well, no, I guess all the Jews are still just not smart enough. Nice new hook for those segments, Cedar versus Cher. Yeah. The talk with a very Obama sympathetic Bill Cher will be interesting. Hope you guys can really debate this topic. While I love Bill's geek's knowledge of the process, Weedsy gives extreme benefit of the doubt. Being unhappy with some of Jane Hampshire's progressive pressure campaigns and rosy glass to a fault, I think Obama needs progressive support. Where has that worldwide worldview gotten us so far? Anyway, make it a regular competition of views. Right. By the way, Sam, you had a great long memory lane plug on the latest episode of Best of the Left. Yes. Yes, I think maybe that's where we got some of our podcast bump, from a Best of the Left plug. Yes, I'm in touch with Jay over there, and I was aware of it, and I thanked him, and I appreciate it. You know, the tax cuts for the top 2% would cost $700 billion over the next 10 years. Nobody talks about the most progressive tax we have, the estate tax. If eliminated, the loss of revenue would be $1 trillion over 10 years, only going to the richest 0.3%. Yeah, what is the status of the estate tax? I'm not sure. This is my first time hosting in primetime. Don't let them put too much makeup on you. We're talking personal income tax. If those business owners with more than $250K taxable invest in job creation, then it's not income. Well, there are some people who run their personal... I'm not quite sure how that works with how we're talking about personal income affecting small businesses. I'm not sure how people organize that. But it simply doesn't create job creation. The amount of money you're talking about when you go from 31 to 39%. Whatever the 7% is increase, it's not enough to hire anybody anyways. So it's not even close. Good to hear a talk show construct a reasonable prescription for a primary challenge in 12. It seems like others have been dancing around the idea but aren't ready to consider it seriously. You're moving the Overton window, Sam. What was once unthinkable is now just ill-advised. Keep it up. Well, look, you know, I'm not signing off on it, but I do think that it is a conversation that people should have because now is the only time to have it, frankly. Because Iowa is in a year, right?
Yeah.
Jesus. This is all just so fucked up. The Germans rolled around it like butter, the Maginot line. Yeah, what are you going to do? Yeah, Schultz is doing double duty tonight, filling in for Rachel. That'll be interesting when I introduce. Did I say house and countdown? Yes, I did. Didi Fru, thank you. Sweater is good, not too suburban, says Chris. Starting to wonder if Democrats who consider themselves progressive should just drop out of the Democratic Party and start their own third party. I don't think so. I just don't think that has leverage. Not right now. I just don't think that's viable. Good luck tonight. How much do you get to set your agenda on the show? How much is dictated? I don't know. I mean, I imagine right now a lot of it's dictated, but, you know, it's not like I'm going on to do Sean Hannity show where I'd be like, hey, wait a second. I got to say what?
Throw a football.
Do I really? Seriously? This tax cuts for the... Oh, all right. Well, okay. Gulfstream 2, why don't the Dems point out the rich already got a tax break by not paying Social Security taxes and all their income? They're talking about cutting Social Security at this point. Not to send you following Marin off the cliff of the bear, but Vice Guide to Travel and Devil Came on Horseback are great docs, docus on Netflix streaming. Good, Bad, and Weird was good, too. Homage to Sergio Leone with Kung Fu Twist. Send me an email with that, those suggestions. Do I have a decent tie? I think so. What's wrong with my ties?
One of the YouTube commenters said it looked like you were getting ready to go to a bar mitzvah like the last time you wore a suit and tie on this camera.
I got a good tie. I think I got a good tie. I think my ties are okay. I did not watch Scott Pilgrim yet. Cat Fudd, as a limited liability corp passes corporate profit through the partners as ordinary income. Yes, LLCs. There you go. Thank you. Jimmy Reefercake, will you be taking text messages from Jimmy Reefercake tonight on Countdown? Highly doubtful. But I feel more comfortable knowing that you're out there. Todd, Countdown, congrats. I've written to Keith and MSNBC more than once. I appreciate that. Does Keith? No, I was on with Keith like a month ago in studio. So I don't think he has a problem with me. Apparently, though, some people out there think my ties are problematic.
Just got to hope one of them.
All right, folks, we're going to cut this a little short, obviously, because I got to go get a tie because I'm wearing my bar mitzvah sweater.
You are in the perfect part of town to find a tie, though.
For like a dollar, too.
Yeah, well, too.
Dollar tie district. I think I might be wearing a $5 tie tonight. I'm not kidding. All right, folks, we'll make up for this tomorrow. Go buy some coffee at Just Co-op.
Just Coffee.
Do it.
.coop.
JustCoffee.coop. Do it. Do it, do it, do it. It's great coffee. It's a great gift for the holidays. Great gift.
It's why we're here in the morning.
It is why we're here. Talk to you later, folks. Yeah, no. The nets are gonna kick in.